So on September 11th, 2001, I woke up, I took a shower, I ate a bagel with cream cheese and a small cup of orange juice. I noticed the clock and I was already running late for class, so I grabbed my bag, got in the car, and I had a midterm exam that day. So as I drove frantically down the freeway, I had my notepad locked with my arms right on the steering wheel, last second cramming for that midterm. Do you remember the days? So as I finally got to school, there was like this dark cloud over my college campus. And of course, I was oblivious to it. So as I'm running to class, I see these huddles of people, these people praying. There's other people that were just crying. These other people that were locked intensely on their cell phones everywhere. And then when I got to class, the professor was standing outside of the class, and the professor hugged me. Now I'm thinking, a professor hugged me. And then he whispered, "There'll be no midterm today." To which I was like, "Yes!" And then he said, "Go sit down with your other classmates." And the lights were turned off. And I went in and I sat down in my seat, and then I saw it. Those images over and over. Shocking images. Now, the rest of the day was a little bit of a blur for me, but there are some places I went, some things that I observed, like at the coffee shop that I went to, I noticed that people weren't as demanding. They were gracious to one another. I noticed that on the freeway, people were actually kind and let people in and out of the lanes. I noticed that at the Barnes & Noble, people were sharing that real deep heart stuff, you know, the hopes and the dreams, and people were listening. I noticed that at the grocery store, people were helping one another. People weren't in a hurry. And then I noticed in my own neighborhood, people were all out on their porches. People were knocking on the doors of neighbors and saying, "What can we do to help? Are you doing okay? Can we have you over for a meal?" There was this incredible buzz of love in the air. It's as if all that pain, all that horrible images that we saw pushed forth the very best in every one of us. Love and freedom were bursting forth out of our life. It was an incredible moment. Within my own family, long-standing forgivenesses and offenses, long-standing grudges were forgiven. It was a great day. We were free people. And free people are people who are alive, people who are present to others, people who are open, people who are forgiving, people who are peaceful, people who are compassionate, and people who are generous. There was this awesome space open within our hearts. And I saw this image this week in the New Yorker magazine of this photograph that was just taken not too long ago. And what you'll notice is that this is a father holding his son up just hundreds of miles away from the site of 9/11. And if you could see the son's face, he is beaming with laughter. He is filled with joy. And this proud father is lifting him up high above. And it's the sunset, so it's the last word of the day. And this father and this son are rejoicing. They're free people. They're living in openness and in love. And there's a tattoo on the man's hand that says "hope" in big letters. And I like to imagine that this father is holding high above all the tragedy, all the pain, all the sorrow, his hopes for his son to be a person who lives in freedom. That's what it was like those first few hours after we got the news. People said, "I love you," more frequently. Forgiveness was said. Openness was everywhere. But then, in a day, maybe a week, maybe a month, all that stopped. At the coffee shop I went to, people were angry that their latte wasn't hot enough. On the highway, people returned to their usual gestures, you know, the New York hellos of our world. At the Barnes & Noble, people were so obsessed with themselves and all their insecurities that they plugged their ears to their friends, to their family. And then there's the grocery store. People were in such a hurry, they literally knocking over other people, not present to one another. And then in my neighborhood, all of a sudden, doors were shut. It's as if our eyes were so focused on the TV, we had no time to open our eyes to one another. What was at one moment moments of great heroism and courage turned to apathy, even cowardice. Now, I don't know about you, but that's what it means to live in slavery, to live in fears, to live with anxieties, to live not open to the needs of our world. And I don't know about you, but if I'm really honest, that type of like gut-wrenching, deep honesty, we live between these moments of freedom and slavery. We live our lives in one moment, we get a good night's sleep, we wake up, we're ready to live in freedom and love with one another. And then the very next moment, we use mean words, harsh words. All of a sudden, we're living as slaves. We're living in this bondage. Enslaved people are dead. They're distracted. They're closed. They're merciless. They're anxious. They're calloused. They're stingy. So we live in between these moments, these great moments that we have where we live as free people. And then these moments where life gets the best of us and we live as slaves. We're not unlike our ancient Israelite faith relatives. We have seen the promised land. We've stepped our feet onto that beautiful land that was promised, but fears have overtaken us. We shirk back because we're so afraid of the goodness of the land, and we live out of this cowardice. So it seems to me that's not the way we ought to live as God's people. Early Christians confessed in Galatians 5:1, it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Jesus said in John 10:10, I have come to give them life and give it to them abundantly. God gives us freedom. God opens up the doors for a life of abundant living, a life of free people, of hearts that are fully alive, loving and being loved, receiving and giving. It's an incredible adventure, the Christian journey. But there's some questions that kind of run like this. We see our tendency towards slavery, and we see our tendency towards real, true, lively freedom. But we have to ask ourselves, point blank and honest, do we really want to live as slaves? Do we really want to live life in black and white? Do we want a life sapped of vitality and energy without what God gives us? And I'm convinced that 99% of us affirm, no way, we want abundant life that Jesus offers. But then we get into the how questions. So how? How do we sustain freedom? How, when we're tired and when we're grumpy and when things don't go our way, we still live in freedom? How do we love even when we're at the last resources that we have? Well, there's this great story, the story you heard today, where John the Baptist is looking over, and he has just baptized Jesus, just the passage before, and he's looking over and he says, "There's the Lamb of God." Now that's code words for, there's the one who's going to make things right. There's the one who's going to lead us to freedom. There's the one who is the rabbi, the true teacher that can lead us to abundant life. And so if you notice, two of John the Baptist's disciples decide to follow Jesus. So these two disciples of John the Baptizer are just strolling along with Jesus. Jesus looks behind and he says, "What are you seeking?" And of course, one of the disciples, one courageous one, he says this, "Rabbi," which means teacher, of course. But you have to understand, a rabbi in the ancient world, to follow a rabbi meant a certain commitment. Children were schooled from the beginning of their school days to want to follow a rabbi. And when you followed a rabbi, you didn't just memorize his words. You sought to live life like he did. You sought to pattern your whole existence off of the rabbi. This was a wholehearted commitment. This was a commitment that cost you everything to follow the rabbi. And then he says this. He says, "Where are you staying?" Now, the disciple said, "Where are you staying?" to Jesus. This was not, "Where's your address? I'd like to send you a birthday card." This was, "I would like to put my tent, to literally live with you so I can be like you, the rabbi. I want to live in freedom like you." So the response of this disciple is, "I want to follow you. I want to learn to pattern my life on your ways. I want to live in freedom." Jesus' response is, "Come and see." Come and see. With those words, what Jesus was saying was, "I believe in you. I believe you can make the journey to discipleship. I believe that you have what it takes. I believe you can do this. You can become like me, the rabbi. You can live in freedom." Jesus, for the last 2,000 years, meets us in our low moments, in our high moments, in those moments where we're struggling to understand who we are. And Jesus says, "Come and see." Imagine what life could be like, lived in love, lived in freedom, lived in openness to brothers and sisters. Come and see the beauty that is following God, the adventure of discipleship that awaits every single one of us. There's two little parables that Jesus tells in Matthew's gospel to illustrate what it takes to be a disciple. One is the pearl of great price. A man seeks a fine pearl. And when he finds that pearl that was worth everything, he sells everything that he owns to get the pearl. That's what it means to follow the rabbi. There is a treasure in a field, Jesus tells us. And to be a disciple means that this man, he found the field. He found the treasure. But he sold everything that he had for this little field where this treasure was. Following the rabbi's ways, following the way of freedom, costs us everything. It's going to get tough. It's going to get hard. But what it means is openness and love. Not a life that is shut down, half dead, closed. Following the rabbi opens us to the possibility of love and freedom. But the trick is this. Following the way of Jesus means a commitment to the practices of freedom. A young pianist spends her days and her nights practicing her scales over and over again, mastering this piano in the hopes of one day becoming a great pianist. It took practices for her to become a pianist. An athlete goes through extensive weight training and eats special foods and also does wind sprints in order to be the best possible athlete he can be. It takes practices to become the people that we want to be. And we have a God who says, "Come and see. You can make it. I believe in you. You can become a free person." And so, on this great journey, as these disciples are following, as we are following the rabbi, we learn that Jesus has a lot to teach us, a lot that we have to practice to become. And we have to commit ourselves to these practices. Now, Jesus said three distinctive practices that I think are soul-shaping and world-transforming. Rabbi Jesus said this as he was teaching us to pray. He said, "Forgive, God, forgive us as we forgive those who have trespassed against us." If we're going to be the type of people God calls us to be, we have to forgive. If we're going to be the type of people God calls us to be, we have to love our enemies. Rabbi Jesus taught us, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. If we're going to be the people that Jesus calls us, free people, we also have to serve one another. Rabbi Jesus says, do not be like the Gentiles who lord it over them. Instead, if you want to be the greatest, be the least of all. If you want to be the first, be the last. Rabbi Jesus taught us the way of forgiveness that is so hard for many of us. The way of loving our enemies, that's even tougher. And the way of serving other people without getting anything back in return. Rabbi Jesus taught us the way to freedom. The way of a life overflowing with love and openness to all. So as we put one foot in front of the other and follow this rabbi who leads us forward, we hear the rabbi's voice over every one of us saying, come and see. The adventure begins here. Amen.